Please remember that when play is in progress, pucks will leave the ice surface at a high rate of speed.
He shoots and scores! Both get the game tie goal! Pretty fly for a white guy!
This is the Avalanche's first look at the Racks.
They added more staff for this game tonight. 25 people are out there gathering them in.
The Florida Panthers are proud to select from the Kingston Frontenacs, Eric Goodbranson.
Jonathan Huberdeau.
Quinton Howden.
Nick Bukestad. Dmitry Kulikov.
You're listening to Rat Trick Radio.
Thank you for listening to Rat Trick Radio. We are so excited. We have an action-packed show for you tonight as we recap the last few games. We've got some great interviews coming up with Brian Campbell of the Florida Panthers. We've got author Jason Ferris on the show today and Coach K from Montreal to talk about the New Year's Eve Battle Royale between Montreal and the Florida Panthers. And with me today, as always, is my good friend and yours, David Lasseter.
Hello, Josh. Hello, everybody. Happy New Year to everybody. Hope everyone's having a great holiday season, enjoying some nice Florida Panthers hockey at home. And we look forward to a healthy and happy and successful 2012.
And of course, joining us, the man, the myth, the legend himself, the senior editor of theRatTrick.com, Frank Rikus.
Hello, everybody. Dave, Josh, our listeners. Happy New Year to everybody. It's been a great end of 2011, and I think 2012 is going to be even better, mostly because even years are always better than odd years.
If you say so, sir, you've been around long enough to know the difference. Tonight we're going to be talking quite a bit about Florida Panthers hockey, but let's just start off with a brief recap, looking back at the last few games the Panthers have played. What a crazy week it has been. The Florida Panthers, of course, started off versus the Ottawa Senators with a crazy game where they kept coming back and they ended up getting that 1 point. Then there was that devastating defeat in Boston. And then, of course, coming back Tuesday night at home against the Toronto Maple Leafs and really getting a great game and a great win there. What were your thoughts about the games the last couple of weeks?
Well, I'm going to throw that Boston game right out of there, not only because I didn't see it live, thank you to the fun of holiday shopping, but really, to me, that happens every once in a while. Team is shorthanded, as the Panthers were against the Stanley Cup champions, who probably want a little bit of revenge. I'm throwing that one out the window. But really, the night before against Ottawa, really, what an outstanding performance. Granted, they got a little help, I think, from the officials when Foligno was thrown out. But to somehow grab a point late when that looked like they probably were going to lose that game really showed a lot. Stephen Weiss injured in that game. Erica Branson was scratched in that game for Keith Nellerby. A lot of things going against them, except, of course, the Foligno call. But they took advantage of everything that they possibly could have in that game, got a point. It was disappointing that they somehow couldn't sneak that extra point, but when you look at games like that that would last year would have been easily been a loss, to see them get a point, you know, get another point in the standings, increase the lead a little bit over the Winnipeg Jets and the Washington Capitals, that was impressive. And I was really impressed Tuesday night against Toronto, the way everyone kind of pitched in. We knew Stephen Weiss wasn't going to be in, seven forwards still out. And the way everybody contributed, Jose Theodore, yeah, he gave up three goals, but he played outstanding in that game. That game could have gotten a lot worse were it not for him. And to see guys like Michael Repick and Bill Thomas contribute is a big boost, because, you know, really you can look at, you know, the loss of seven forwards and say, well, this is going to be a long stretch until we get some guys back. Those guys help alleviate a little bit of that.
Yeah, I think those three games really kind of told three really different stories, actually. You're going to, like Dave, you said, you know, throw that Boston game out there. I'm going to comment on that just briefly. I think everybody kind of knew and felt that, you know, this game was not going to be a good game. And, you know, I think I wrote in my preview or afterwards that day, you know, I knew it was going to be bad, but I didn't think it was going to be that bad. But you know, we had a depleted lineup, mostly all of our top players were out. You know, we're missing seven forwards. And, you know, from the get-go, that game was pretty much done after the first, 10 minutes or so. So you're right, we got to throw that one out there. And if that's the worst game that we play all year, then, you know, good, we got it out of the way. Moving back to the game before that in Ottawa, you know, the thing that I really liked about that game is the resiliency that the Panthers, you know, have continued to show not only all year but also in that game. To come back three times in one night to tie the score, I think all three of us would agree that last year and even a couple of seasons before that, a game like that's not going to happen, especially in Ottawa, a town that, you know, we typically don't play very well in. And I think we just kind of dug our heels in. You know, we admitted to ourselves that we wanted to be in this game. And, you know, probably that's one of those games where you actually say, well, you know what, I'm happy with a point. And I know that most of the time we don't really like to do that. But to come out of there with 1 point with a banged up team against an Ottawa team that actually has been a surprise this year, I think we really have to be very, very pleased with that. And all around, you know, it's, I think a lot of the responsibility goes to Kevin Dineen for being able to keep the players focused and keep their heads on straight, especially in a game like that on the road. As we go to the Toronto game the other night, which I thought was another really solid game, and Dave, you alluded to it as well about Jose Theodore. Yes, he gave up three goals, but honestly, there could have been five or six. That game could have gotten away from us very easily, but he kept us in there. Again, another night of resiliency, and for a night when guys had to step up, and I think Christopher Stieg talked about it in the morning that day, you know, everybody has to step up, but there has to be players who aren't expected to step up that have to step forward. And, you know, Michael Repek had probably his best game in the 60-odd games he's played as a Florida Panther, and I think we know that he's got some talent. It's just a question of, you know, can he put it together for a solid evening and then do that night after night? That's something that we hopefully will be seeing going forward. Bill Thomas, you know, nice fluke goal. We'll take that. But, you know, hard work. It was nice to see the San Antonio guys work as hard as they did and get rewarded. And then, of course, you know, still have Versteeg and Fleischman, you know, doing the stuff that we expect of them to kind of roll it all around. So, you know, three interesting games, all a little bit different, but I think winning that Toronto game was absolutely huge. And kudos to the guys, kudos to the coaching staff, because honestly, I don't think we would have seen this in years past.
Well, speaking of that Toronto game, following that game, I got a couple of minutes with Brian Campbell, who talked to me not only about that huge win against the Maple Leafs, but the games coming up on Friday and Saturday against the New York Rangers and the Montreal Canadiens and everything that that brings as far as extra fans to the Bank Atlantic Center. So I was very fortunate that he spoke to me, and here's what he had to say.
A great game for you tonight. You come off a situation where you still have seven guys out against a team coming in a winning streak, playing good hockey. It's got to be a big boost for this room tonight.
Yeah, you know, all my Hulkamaniacs were great. No, you know, it's we had a tough game in Boston there, and obviously you want to get back and you know, our so-called second half of the season after the Christmas break here and come out. And, you know, we know Toronto needs the points just as much of us as us. And, you know, we just kept trying to battle, and you know, we got better as the game went on. I think we really obviously struggled, but we kept our shifts short and just maintained in the first period what we had to do.
You mentioned the game in Boston. You had to sit with that through the holiday break. Does that kind of fester over those few days off, or you can't wait to get back out there?
You know, our general manager is Dale, has been great all season, and he came in and talked to us after that Boston game, and I think everybody's attitude just, you know, we forgot about it, we moved on. It was one game, doesn't matter, you know, you lose 8-0, 2-1, doesn't matter, but we were playing too well in the first half of the season there to let that bother us over the Christmas break. So, you know, with his words of encouragement, you know, just made everybody's holiday good. And then we got back to work, you know, especially tonight.
Still a couple of big games left on this homestand. New York, Montreal coming in. New York playing outstanding hockey. What's the mindset going to that game? Obviously, you want to win that game, but you're still down some horses, some injuries that haven't, some guys who haven't come back yet.
Yeah, we got beat pretty good by them in New York. So you know, we have to adjust our game a little bit. You know, we can't be running as much as we were maybe earlier on in the season, and we just got to maintain and play solid around Theo or Clemenson, who's ever in net, and. You know, try to win that special teams battle, and it'll give ourselves a shot.
Yeah, that game coming up against Montreal on New Year's Eve, probably going to be more like a Montreal home game in terms of number of fans here. How does that sit with you? This is your first year with the team, your first chance to experience it. Does it bother you? Does it make you angry?
I don't care. Just as long as they come to the game, I think, for me. As long as the building's full and people are supporting us, I think maybe we'll change a Montreal fan that's going to want to come out and watch us, that maybe lives down here and come and want to watch us play other teams. If we play a good brand of hockey, which I feel we do. So, you know, I think that's we can't worry about that, but it sure is fun beating teams like Toronto tonight when there's maybe a lot of Leaf fans there. And
there were a lot in there.
Yeah, and that's great. I'm glad they're coming to the games, but, you know, hopefully, you know, maybe their second favorite team becomes the Florida Panthers, and that's fine by me. So, you know, it's we're just trying to play a fun brand of hockey with some good players, and you know, it's good seeing the building full.
Thanks a lot, Brian.
Thanks.
Hey, everybody, this is Arena MC for the Florida Panthers, Bill Murphy. You're listening to the greatest Florida Panthers podcast anywhere on the net, Rat Trick Radio.
Okay, great stuff from Brian. Really one of my favorite guys to talk to on the team. He's, you know, he's pretty soft-spoken, but to look in his eyes as he's talking about how he said he doesn't care who's there, you know, he just wants to play. But that is not the only game that's going to be taking place on New Year's Eve, that Montreal game. We have World Juniors action. That tournament started on Monday. And from an American standpoint, which of course is my standpoint, not so good so far, or not so far so good, you know, losing the other day to Finland 4-1, which was a bit of a nightmare. But on the bright side, 7 Panther prospects in the tournament. All of them performing well. All of them have a point. Jonathan Huberdeau, of course, had the monster Boxing Day performance. 5 points. He had a goal and 4 assists. Really showcasing a lot of the passing that he does. He seemed to set up shot behind the opposing net and was firing passes out of there like a guy that wore 99, not 11, which – you could probably hear me smiling from my place of residence as that was going on. I'm a big fan of this kid. But also, you looked at the, you know, earlier in the day, or I'm sorry, later in that day, you had Nick Bjugstad, Kyle Rau, both recording goals. Big things are expected from these guys, especially Bjugstad. Bjugstad, a high draft pick. So great to see the way they performed. But then also, you know, and I'm probably going to mess up his name, but Jonas Doskoi from Finland has picked up a point in there. And Yaroslav Kosov for Russia actually has 2 points. So Panthers are doing very well. The prospects are doing very well in the World Junior Tournament. The performance by Jonathan Huberdeau is certainly not surprising to anybody who knows what this kid can do. And the good thing is he seems to kind of be playing to his role right now. He's on a hot line, so he's just making passes. He's not forcing his game. You know, his goal that he scored against Finland, he saw an opportunity on the power play, walked right to the net, fired it in. So that was great to see. But he just seems right now, he's got a couple of hot line mates. He just seems content to pass and do whatever he can to help that team win.
Yeah, Dave, and how awesome is it to have all of that going on NHL Network? I mean, it is a really awesome thing to be able to watch it, and I hope that NHL does some more stuff like this. I'd like to see some more OHL games on nights that they don't have NHL games picked up. I love watching it, and I think it's just really an awesome opportunity for hockey fans that really, in the past, know a little bit about what's going on with the World Juniors, but don't really know what's going on.
I think that's a great point. But also, if you are a person that maybe has the expanded sports package on DirecTV or your local cable system, Friday night is college hockey night. You can find Nick Bjugstad and Kyle Rau playing on Fox Sports North. It seems every Friday. College sports, you can usually find North Dakota, so you get to see Connor Brickley and you get to see Rocco Grimaldi when he's healthy. Josh, you said it perfectly. You know, NHL Network, you know, help us out a little bit. We'd love to see some of these junior games and some of the bigger players.
For sure, for sure. Great stuff. And then to top it all off, it's like a beautiful ice cream sundae. We have the NHL games. We have the World Juniors going on. We have all of these things this month. And then to top all of it off, we get the beautiful, beautiful holiday gift of HBO 24/7. What an amazing thing to just have a journey to look inside the NHL, to see what refs and players say on the ice, to learn things about the universe and Tigers. Frank, what has been your thoughts on the HBO 24/7 series so far?
Well, besides the craziness of Ilya Bryzgalov, I think this is probably one of the coolest shows about sports that you can do. And like you said, Josh, to follow players around. I mean, obviously we've had access with the dressing room and those kind of things, but in-game action, hear them mic'd up, hear what's going on the benches, on the ice, follow them around or have them being followed around a little bit in their personal lives. I think it's really such an interesting concept that I wish it would have been thought about sooner, but I think it's one of the great things on TV, and I think it really helps the fan appreciate what these guys have to go through, you know, especially, you know, the focus lately with all the different concussions. You know, it's really interesting about the whole process with Claude Giroux, and, you know, he wants to get out there, he wants to play, but he can't, and just, you know, how they look at that whole situation, and the coaches, and what they do in between periods, and what they say, and just how everything just kind of melts together. I think it's one of the greatest things that sports, you know, has ever thought of to do.
Frank, you know, I brought up in joke, you know, the Ilya Bryzgalov stuff about Tigers and the universe and things. But like every time I watch this show, and I've actually watched some of the episodes multiple times, is it just me or is he legitimately crazy? Like, you listen to Ilya Bryzgalov talk, and you're like, this guy is crazy. And then I thought it was really funny, in the second episode, they referenced that, and he says, well, you think I'm crazy? You know, these defensemen, they go down on the ice and take shots at 100 miles an hour without any pads. Who's the crazy one? But, you know, I think it's interesting hearing people talk about how back in the day, you know, the goalie really was the guy who was a little off kilter because he was taking pucks to the head all the time. And, you know, I just think it's really funny to hear his personality and hear him talk and just his attitude. It just reminds me, like, of Slapshot. It makes me feel like I'm watching a Slapshot HBO documentary.
Yeah, I kind of wondered the same thing. I said to actually to myself, you know, is this like been set up for him to do this, or is he really this way, you know? And I think the funniest part was it was episode 2 when he came in with his lunch to sit down, and Yager gets up and moves to another table, and he gets upset, so he Bryzgalov gets up and fouls him to the table. It's just – it's – I don't know. I still think goaltenders are the craziest. I know defensemen go down and block those shots, but I think if you learn and do it right, you're turning your head. But he is the epitome of wacko goaltenders.
It's just fun to watch because I don't think that even the media would have known in Philly that the extent to which he was, you know, that way until they really got a chance to interview him like that. And, you know, it's just – it's interesting. You see the personalities come out. And actually – you know, every year when it's a Winter Classic where I don't really have any emotional investment in either of the teams, I say, you know, it's cool and all, but I don't know if I'll watch the whole game. I just don't care that much about those two teams. I definitely care about the atmosphere and the NHL, you know, bigness of it and the event, but I don't so much care about the teams. But every time now that I've watched this HBO special last year and this year, it's actually got me interested in the teams because you begin to see the personality of the players.
Well, and I think what HBO is trying to do, they've been successful at, and you've obviously I don't want to say fell right into it, but I think that's what they want. They want to like tease us a little bit by running the show before the actual event starts, so that you have more of an interest. Because honestly, You know, do I care about, you know, the Philadelphia Flyers and the New York Rangers? Heck no. Did I care about Pittsburgh and Buffalo? Heck no. But because of, you know, all this that's going on beforehand, you certainly take more of an interest in what's going on. So you do want to pay attention.
For sure. And I recommend, if you're a listener and you haven't watched this show yet, do it. And you don't have to be rich like us and have HBO. You can actually go on NHL.com and they're actually airing them the Saturday after they air. So the Saturday after they air on HBO, you can actually watch it for free on NHL.com, which I think is awesome.
Yeah, I think that's great that they make it available to everybody. There's probably some other internet feeds where you can watch it, but I think NHL.com is doing the right thing by, you know, making it available to everybody. So that's a great thing. And, you know, watch it once, watch it a couple times, because I know, like anything else, you know, you see a movie once, you see it the second time, you're going to pick up something that you didn't see the first time.
All right, now we have an interview that we did with a guy named Jason Ferris. He is the author of Behind the Moves, The Inside Scoop on NHL General Managers. Let's go ahead and listen to that interview right now. All right, and joining us now here on Rat Chick Radio is Jason Ferris, the author of Behind the Moves Inside the NHL's GMs. Welcome, Jason, to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Jason, you came out with this book, Behind the Moves, which is a fascinating, in-depth look at the NHL general managers. What prompted you to do this, and why do you think it took so long for somebody to just sit down and interview these general managers?
Well, what prompted me was the absence of anything written about the general managers. I'm a lifelong hockey fan, and in my professional life have run a number of businesses. So I guess for me, the impetus to do it was really the marriage of my interest in hockey and understanding what it takes to build winning organizations and winning teams. I think in terms of why it hasn't been done, the answer is probably quite simple, and that is the access to the GMs is very difficult. And these guys are incredibly guarded, private people. Now, of course, in today's world, they're heavily guarded and handled by media people and PR people and whatnot. So I basically took 2 years out of my life, did over 60,000 miles a year in travel, going around meeting each of the GMs who've taken a team to the Stanley Cup Finals. There's 35 of them who are alive, building sort of trusted relationships and allowing them to talk about their long-term perspective, not just, you know, the current headshot rule in the NHL or, you know, what somebody said, or, you know, allowing them to talk about their overall goals and what it's really like for them to deal with each other, each of the GMs behind that sort of velvet curtain.
Well, I think what a lot of people don't realize is just how much personality some of these guys have. I mean, you see them after their team takes a loss, and you see them throwing stuff or getting angry or getting upset. And then you see them when their team wins, and they walk around the locker room, and they give out handshakes or fist bumps. I mean, these guys have great personalities. And as hockey fans, we have a tendency to see them as just this figurehead in a press release. But there really are some really interesting people involved in general managing, right?
Oh, absolutely. They're all fascinating guys. And I spent time with the creme de la creme, you know, the guys that have built winners. And, of course, many of these guys, you know, including the GM you've got there in Florida, many of these guys are, you know, grew up in NHL dressing rooms. So, you know, they themselves had a relationship or relationships with general managers when they were a player. So there's fascinating stories that each of them have about, you know, what they learned from GMs and the treatment that they received by GMs during their playing career. And then, of course, you know, then they roll the clock forward and they're GMs now dealing with each other. And so they're fascinating guys that are highly connected to each other in the league and obviously have a long pedigree and a long history and lots of great stories and anecdotes about general management. I think that's kind of one of the fun things about this book, Behind the Moves, is it allows fans to sort of see the evolution of the role of general manager over the last 50 years or so without being sort of a dusty history book. It's something where these guys tell great stories about, you know, treatment they received as players and now how they try to deal with players and deal with the different stakeholders the GMs have to deal with.
Jason, let me ask you about the GM that we do have here in Florida, Dale Tallon. Obviously, he got very close to winning the Cup as the GM in Chicago. Have you ever seen a GM do what Dale has done here in Florida, just blowing up a team and really putting it back together in just a couple of years? And how do you see that as the resident expert on general managers as a strategy?
So I would agree with you that in the current construct of the league, you know, with the current collective bargaining agreement and salary constraints and whatnot. I mean, Dale has definitely probably, you know, invoked about the most change in an organization in a short period of time as anybody. But if you were to roll the clock back 20, 30, 40 years when maybe some of those constraints that I just described aren't really in place, as much, there were a lot of GMs that reacted, you know, to a bad season by pretty much, you know, completely overhauling the team. So it wasn't totally, what he's done isn't totally new. I can remember back in the day, GM Emile Francis, who was the long-term GM of the Rangers, didn't like the way his team was playing and put his entire team on waivers on the same day. So, you know, you don't see those kind of hijinks pulled in the league anymore, but there was certainly a time with a lot of the franchises, you know, back in the day where massive change was overtaken overnight. And but Dale's done a really nice job, I think, of remaking that team. You know, they've got lots of cap room, and they've brought in some good young players, and I think really he's done what successful GMs do, which is to put a real stamp and a personality and an identity on that team, and that's a hard thing to do sometimes. But he's I think really you know, got a blueprint, and he's just put it in place in short order.
Jason, I saw you doing an interview with Brian Burke recently, and Burke was talking about how Bill Torrey had kind of given him some really good advice about, you know, how to construct a team and how to play in the playoffs. And he had really looked up to Bill Torrey. Obviously, Bill Torrey is, you know, extremely successful general manager. How much of an asset do you think he is for the Florida Panthers being involved with the day-to-day operations of the team?
Well, if you talk around the league about where general managers rank all time, and there have been 174 of them all time in the NHL, Bill Torrey, I think, would undoubtedly be considered in the top five for what he's done, not just in building that dynasty in Long Island, but what he's done in Florida, but also you know, with an expansion team, the California Seals before the Islanders. Bill is somebody that I think understands, you know, the U.S. market teams, in particular sort of the, quote, non-traditional markets. He understands the importance of managing ownership, managing expectations, and of creating space for the hockey operations group to do their thing without that, you know, interference from ownership that can cause problems. Bill also is somebody that I think understands the stability required to build a winner and what it takes to take the time to build the scouting staffs and draft the players and develop the players and give the coaching staff, you know, enough runway to actually become successful. So Bill is a really solid guy, and to have him working with somebody like a Dale Talon, I think Florida's got a really nice mix there. Bill is probably the one, and you alluded to it with Berkey's conversation, the one that has best articulated, I think, what it takes to win for an NHL GM and for a team, and that is, you know, an NHL team has to win four rounds of the playoffs. That's the goal. And to win four rounds, you know, Bill always said you've got to construct your team in a way that can win four rounds in different ways. You're going to have to win an offensive round on pure skill. You're going to have to win a round on defensive play. You're going to have to win a round on you know, special teams, power play, penalty killing, and probably goaltending would be considered part of that as well. And then you're going to have to win a round on toughness. And you're going to be tested through the playoffs, and that's the beauty of the Stanley Cup playoffs, and I think why they it's the toughest championship to win. And so, you know, Bill sort of took that philosophy and used that to piece together his teams, and I think that's a good articulation of the fundamental challenge of the GM.
Well, and I think he's such a core part of the Panthers' history. I don't know if you're aware, but Bill Torrey's number, quote unquote, is actually retired in the Bank Atlantic Center.
Yeah, actually, you know, he's the only one in a general manager capacity for whom that's been done, and in fact, it's been done in two cities. And the book, if you look on the Bill Torrey page, there's a four-page spread on Bill Torrey. We've actually got pictures of both the one hanging in the rafters of Bowtie Bill in Long Island, and then the one for the Panthers as well. So that's a pretty unique thing, and definitely speaks to you know, his prominence, I guess, in the GM community.
Now, Jason, obviously I have the book and I really have been enjoying reading through it. I haven't finished it yet, but I couldn't wait to get it and crack it open. Obviously, you share lots of stories that are, well, for the most part, uncensored by team PR or NHL scribes or whatever. But What are some of the stories in the book that you could share with the listeners that you just found really fascinating? Because I think it's always interesting to hear about the things that you never heard about. Like, for instance, when Brian Burke challenged Kevin Lowe to a barn fight. Things like that that are just really interesting stories. What are some of the things that you heard from GMs and said, wow, I can't believe that?
Well, another fighting story. I know Serge Savard, longtime GM of the Canadiens, and Bob Gainey, when he was GM in Dallas, they were at an NHL general managers meeting, and I guess there was dispute between the two about the signing of a player and what it was doing to the salary structure. And all the GMs were in a bar at the meeting, and literally almost got into fisticuffs. And Brian Burke at the time was working with the league and working with Gary Bettman, and Gary and Brian were the only two guys there. And you know, Brian said they were clearing the stools and whatnot out of the way so that the guys could get ready to fight because they were that angry about each other. So it gives you some sense about how hard these guys are competing. But you know, a lot of the fun stories, you know, beyond just sort of the trade talk stories and what went wrong with trades and how deals went down, which there's a lot of that in the book. A lot of the fun stuff is sort of the hijinks and the tomfoolery that goes on behind the scenes, because it really gets at how these guys are needling each other and testing each other at every turn, you know, trying to get an advantage, trying to see, you know, how much they can push each of the guys. Neil Smith, the longtime GM in New York, who won a cup for the Rangers, is, I think, universally considered probably one of the big pranksters in the GM community. There's lots of great stories about him doing pranks. And one of the fun ones was with his crosstown rival, the New Jersey Devils, and Lou Lamoriello, the GM there, who was a real straight-laced guy. In the early days of cell phones, Neil noticed that Lamoriello had a phone that had a display on it, and he said, oh, let me take a look at that. And he programmed his phone to say, Devils suck, on the display, and he gave it back to Lamoriello, and Lamoriello wasn't very tech savvy, and apparently 3 weeks later Smith looked over and Lamoriello was still carrying around a phone that said Devils suck on it. So, you know, just fun things like that behind the scenes that, you know, no fan is going to be privy to unless you've got these GMs in a relaxed environment where they can tell their stories. And that's what this book is. It's a book that isn't my writing. It's the words of the GMs telling what their stories are. And I think it's something totally unique for fans. And because of that, it's not available in stores. It's only available on the website, which is nhlgms.com. And I think fans will really enjoy this interesting look at the league.
Yeah, Jason, tell us more about the different versions of the book that you have available, because it's not just the one, paperback book that you can buy in a store. It's a special edition kind of coffee table type book.
Yeah, this is a bit of a monster. It's 252 pages. It's only sold in hard copy, and there are 12 different limited editions. There's one for different teams, like, you know, Pittsburgh has an edition that's hand-signed and hand-numbered by Ray Shiro and Craig Patrick, as an example. There's another edition for Detroit, signed and numbered by Kenny Holland and Jim Devolano. And so it goes on and on for the, you know, if you've got a favorite team or a favorite GM, you'll be able to get a copy of one that's branded in those team colors and signed by the GM. In your market, Bill Torrey is a legendary GM, and there's actually 150 copies of a Legends GM book, which is hand-signed and hand-numbered by both Bill Torrey, Harry Sinden, Emil Francis, and Glenn Sather. So that's kind of a unique one. It's almost sold out, but fans that are interested in that or any of the other limited editions can go to nhlgms.com and order their own.
All right. Thank you, Jason, so much. You can check out Jason's website, nhlgms.com, or you can follow him on Twitter at Beyond the Moves. And actually, Jason, you work with the Dallas Stars now, don't you?
I did. As a result of all this, I've been working with GMs and team presidents around the league now for the last couple of years, and was able to translate that into a really great opportunity, and one I'm looking forward to with the Dallas Stars on the business side of their operation. And we look forward to, you know, restoring that franchise from a business standpoint to one of real success. It's been a good franchise in the league, and it's a great opportunity for me personally. I'm really looking forward to it.
Well, listeners, I really encourage you to pick up this book. And Jason, I just want to say, as a fan, not just of the media, but just as an NHL fan, thank you so much for writing a book. I know it's being heralded as the best hockey book of the year, and I'm thoroughly enjoying it so far.
Well, I'm really glad that's the reaction we seem to have gotten, and I don't know whether somebody else will take the time to do this in the other sports, but certainly it's a unique look, and whether, you know, hockey or any sport is of interest to you, I think the leadership insights and the management insights into what it takes to run a hockey team are things that people can draw into their own lives and into other sports. So hopefully it's something that is of interest to fans all over.
Thank you, Jason. We really appreciate it.
Okay, bye-bye.
Hey, this is Kevin Dineen, and you're listening to Rat Trick Radio.
Great stuff from Jason. Wow, what a guy who really knows what's going on in the world of general managing. And I think it's so cool that he got out of that managing experience an actual job in the NHL working for the Dallas Stars. And it's so cool to read this book. And again, I'll just reiterate, if you do not have this book and you can afford it, get online today, order a copy. It is great. And you can get it at NHLGMs.com. Well, gentlemen, we have quite a few games coming up here that are going to be of great importance, maybe not necessarily in the standings, but from an attendance or attendee point of view. These are big games for the Florida Panthers, with the New York Rangers coming to town tonight as this episode airs on Friday, December 30th. And, of course, we've got Montreal Canadiens with their traditional New Year's Eve matchup. Dave, it kind of gives you a little bit of a Empire versus Rebel Alliance theme when the Montreal Canadiens come walking into town to face off against the Panthers, doesn't it?
It absolutely is, Josh, and you have the roles of Darth Vader and Emperor Palpatine being played by the New York Rangers and the Montreal Canadiens in this situation. You know, personally, as a fan, I really, really don't like being outnumbered in my own building, but also as a fan of this team and of this market and kind of understanding the economics of the situation, they need big gate receipts from these games. So I'm fine with it, you know. And as long as, you know, you get fans who come in and who aren't maybe necessarily looking to cause serious trouble in the stands, it's all in good fun. And we can always hang our hat on the fact that it's not always going to be like this. This is a team that's on the uprise. There'll be more Panther fans to buy the tickets instead of having to market to anyone else. So I understand that. That said, as far as the attendance situation, I was kind of messing around with numbers today. And if both of these games are in fact sellouts, and this is also including the pretty high number of seats sold for this past Tuesday's game, you know, this could, big gates here could go ahead and make the average attendance almost 16,500. Which is significantly up from last year. So you'll take that. You know, it looks great. It looks great in the standings, yeah, or in the numbers. And, yeah, everyone's going to say, well, it's all Montreal fans, it's all Ranger fans, but that's fine. But getting to the product on the ice, the Panthers, you know, of course, will face the Rangers first. And they are still smarting from the 6-1 pacing that the Rangers put on them at Madison Square Garden up until the Boston game. That was probably the low point of the season. And I think in my recap, I just put a video of a guy trashing a room in anger. So let's hope that's not that situation right now. You know, the Rangers come in playing pretty good hockey. They lost the other night to Washington. So they can be beaten. Granted, you'd like to have all your horses for this game, but it's not the way it is. You got to go out and play with who you have. So hopefully, you know, there's a positive result there. And in Montreal, you know, we're so used to Montreal with the fans, but, you know, on the ice, this is a team that can be beaten. You know, this is a team that's way down in the standings. There's all kinds of, you know, things going on with the coach. And there's a lot of outside distraction from the French media saying that Randy Cunningworth shouldn't have the job. The coach should speak French, must speak French. So there's a whole lot of things going on with this team. I think they have some injuries too. So there's no reason why the Panthers, regardless of how many Montreal fans are in the stands, can win. You know, there's no reason they shouldn't win this game. They already went up to Montreal, the Bell Center, back in October, beat them there. So if they want to call this Bell Center South for the day, that's fine, as long as they win. I couldn't care less. Right now it's about 2 points in the standings.
Frank, how do you feel? I know that you experienced the joy that it is to be surrounded by Toronto fans on Tuesday night who are very passionate about their team. How do you feel when the building gets filled up with these kind of fans?
Well, like Dave said, I understand the economics of the situation, and we want to have people in the building. And I certainly don't mind opposing fans coming down here and filling our building, but I would expect them to be quote-unquote respectful to a degree. You know, we had a guy that was two seats away from my daughter that was just acting like an obnoxious fool every time the Leafs scored. And when they got that second goal, which made it, I think, 4-2, he acted as though the comeback was on, it was in full force, and watch out, Florida, this game is over. And, you know, when we made it 5-2, I was just like, you know, this is exactly why you guys are not totally respected when you come down here. But I have no problem with a visiting fan or a group of fans coming down here and cheering for their team, but don't act like a buffoon while you're doing it. As far as the games are concerned, you know, I know there's going to be a lot of Ranger fans. There's always going to be a lot of Canadians fans, and that's fine. But I kind of think it to be more like for these kind of games, especially at this time of year because of the holidays, kind of have that playoff atmosphere type thing going on. And while some of you listeners may not know exactly what that feels like, you can just kind of feel a little bit more energy in the building, a little more anxiety building up between the fans. You know, everybody's looking at each other, looking at the opposing sweaters that are walking around the building and making comments. But I think when we all get down to the bottom line here, I mean, these are two games that, you know, the Panthers need. It would be nice to get 4 points out of it. That obviously means 2 wins in a row, but with a beaten up roster, that may not be possible. But if we skate out of here with 3 points, that would be fantastic. Maybe we catch the Rangers on an off night where they're a little bit distracted by this 24/7 stuff that's going on, and maybe they're already looking forward to New Year's Eve, which is the next night. And maybe for the Canadians, we get a little bit of what they've been going through lately with, as Dave alluded to, you know, the coaching changes, the potential or the injuries that they've had. I mean, that's a team that's in flux, and we don't really know what we're going to get with them. And I think, you know, the new coach, Randy Cunningworth, is still trying to find his way around and get the team headed in some sort of direction. I think the only thing they do have going for them right now that they can probably count on is Carey Price, their goaltender. But I'm looking forward to these two games. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. And like Dave said, it doesn't matter who's in the building, who's cheering. You know, the Panthers, to them, it's still two games that they know that they have to play hard. And if they play 60 minutes in each game, then, you know, and they play hard in those games, then I think everything will take care of itself. But it's going to be a fun couple nights.
Well, and speaking of crazy fans, we have an interview coming up here with Coach K from Montreal to talk a little bit about the Habs. All right, now joining the program, Rat Trick Radio, Coach K from SportsCenter.com's Montreal Hockey Talk comes on the program to talk a little Habs. Welcome to the program, sir.
Thank you, gentlemen, for having me.
Coach K, you are a diehard Montreal Canadiens fan. How did you get to be in that horrible condition?
I live in a damn city, man. It just comes naturally. I'm pushing 40, so I've been around a long time, you know, through the glory years and through the crappy years, so it's kind of hard to let go, especially with the crappy years right in the middle of it.
Now, Coach, I know that you share our enthusiasm and love for Jacques Martin, but how did you feel about the Jacques Martin firing this week, and what does that do for your hockey club at this point?
Let's just say when I heard the news last Saturday morning, or whatever it was, 2 weeks ago or whatnot, I had a hard time keeping my cell phone in my hand because it was vibrating so often. I think everybody in this town was ecstatic that he was gone. Mind you, I don't think they all understood the growing pains that this team would go through going forward, maybe a week or two, until Randy Cunningworth got a chance to get his grubs into this team. But all in all, I think everybody to a man was happy that Jacques Martin was gone.
Frank, you're like the biggest Jacques Martin fan in the world. How did you feel about that?
I think you've got that incorrect. I'm probably one of the biggest non-Montreal Canadian fan supporters of his firing out there. And I know what Coach K is talking about. His phone was vibrating, and I was running through my Twitter feed, and I couldn't believe all the people that were talking about it and seemed so ecstatic over the whole situation. And I think you and I talked a little bit about it, too.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, obviously, it's a guy that has roots in both the Florida Panthers franchise and the Montreal Canadiens franchise. And so, it was very interesting all around. But, Coach K, let me ask you, what do you think about this whole interim coach not speaking French? Is that really something that's important to the everyday Montreal Canadiens fan, or is that something that the media is really hyping up?
I think the majority of the everyday Montreal Canadiens fan wants a winner. It doesn't matter if the coach speaks Chinese, Japanese, or whatever the hell he speaks. As long as the team wins, I think everybody would be happy. The language bit is more for the hardliners, guys that are in the media that they're too lazy to actually sit down and translate something when the coach says it. You know, fine, they have to do it for a couple of seconds when they're interviewing a player or so on and so forth. But overall, I don't think they actually think things through as far as the French media is concerned. The English media, I mean, they're pretty much impartial to it. But the French media is really judgmental. I mean, there was even one guy, Alain Pedneau, who works for one of our local French papers, who started quoting one of our language laws. It's like, dude, take that lump of coal out of your ass, because I'm sorry, you know, it's not everybody that thinks the way you do. That thinking's long gone almost 20 years ago. And I mean, I can understand the diehard fan that lives outside the city that really doesn't understand that much French, that much English, excuse me. So I can see their viewpoint. But you're talking about maybe a cluster of 200,000 people. The majority of the people in this town and around Montreal are all in agreement that it doesn't matter who the coach is. As long as he can win, I mean, that's all that matters.
Well, and I think the thing to understand, too, is you want a coach that has experience. You want a coach that can, you know, has a consistent plan and a system. And if you're just going for guys who speak French, you're just going to end up with another Jacques Martin.
Well, that's just it. I mean, there's very few guys like Jacques Martin out there. I mean, I've met the guy, and technically, he's a very sound coach. He knows his stuff. It's just that tactically, he hasn't learned to evolve. He hasn't learned how the game has changed, especially since the lockout, which sort of explains his incapability of getting out of the first or second round when he had those powerful teams in Ottawa, or even being able to structure a solid franchise for you guys in Florida. So all in all, I mean, you need somebody who has the skill set to be able to come into Montreal, much like Dale Talon did with Florida, blow almost the whole damn thing up. Pick and choose what you need as far as a skill set is concerned and move forward. I mean, I love what Talon is doing with the Florida Panthers, and I just can't wait to see, because we're all expecting GM Pierre Gauthier here in Montreal to get the axe by the end of the season. So we can't wait to see who comes in here and who actually moves forward and has the guts to stand up to everybody in this town and say, listen, you want results, I'm going to give them to you. Just back off and let me do my job.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Well, Coach, we have an interesting game coming up this weekend on December 31st, New Year's Eve. It seems like we always have a Montreal Canadiens Florida Panthers game. It's really a home game for the Montreal Canadiens, played in South Florida. I'm not sure if you're aware, but the mass amounts of Habs fans that come out. What should Florida Panthers fans be expecting from the Montreal Canadiens at this point in the season?
Well, for the most part, you're going to get a team in flux. Right now, from what I've been able to gauge with Randy Cunningworth, he's getting his grips onto this team, and he's rolling his top two lines a little bit more frequently as opposed to the 3-4, where he's using 3-4 sporadically in specific areas against specific lines. So you're going to see a heavy dose of guys like Camilleri, Plekanec, Cole, and so on and so forth. You're also going to get a huge dose of Carey Price, which I'm sure doesn't disappoint you guys, because he's one of the top-tier goaltenders in this league. Doesn't matter if he plays for the Habs or not. And it's always nice to watch skill like that in goal. So the show that you guys are going to get is going to be great.
Awesome. We're looking forward to it. Yeah, you care to make a wager?
Nah, man. Are you kidding me? Right? You know what? If there was some kind of stability in the organization, I might step out on a limb. But right now, like I said, the team's in flux. And putting a wager out there would be as dumb as, you know, walking out on Montreal streets after the snowstorm we had with a pair of running shoes.
All right, Coach, thanks so much for coming on, and we look forward to watching the game Sunday. Where can listeners find you and your work?
Well, listeners can find me on two stations, actually. I do a bit on MontrealHockeyTalk.com, and I also produce, and I'm in on the discussion on our French sister station, ParlonsCanadien.com. So I'm a busy man, but all in all, it's all in good fun.
All right, thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, guys. Take care.
Want Florida Panthers in-depth information and analysis? Visit theRatTrick.com today. You'll find player interviews, system analysis, breaking news, and so much more. Go there today.
Good stuff from Coach K, talking a little bit about the Montreal Canadiens and what we can expect on Sunday night. And Frank, do you have some thoughts about Jacques Martin? In fact, Frank, I know you're such a big Jacques Martin fan. Let's do something called the X Panther Factor.
Awesome.
All right, guys.
12th captain of the Vancouver Canucks, Mr. Roberto Luongo.
Rangers looking good here to start this overtime. It's Jokinen closing in. His shot, he scores. Holy Jokinen does it again to the Penguins. The New York Rangers with a dramatic win here tonight.
Cut off on the left wing. Board scores. Christian Husely has tipped it in front. That'll be a hat trick.
You will never find a more wretched hive of scum and villainy. We must be cautious.
Well, Josh, I think I need to set the record straight. Everybody knows or should know that I am not a Jacques Martin fan. I'm probably, maybe next to Coach K, the second guy in line that was just as happy as he was to see him get fired. He was down here for about 5 years, and I think, in my estimation, he set this team back with most of what he did. You know, he's got a lot of coaching experience. The guy's won over 600 games, and I give him, you know, credit for that because that's pretty damn hard to do in this league. But also, as Coach K alluded to, his system hasn't really evolved very much. But with everything that he did down here, I mean, he was given contracts to guys for 6 years for $3-4 million that didn't deserve them. You know, Rostislav Olish played 1 year of 75 games. I think he had 29 points. In that year, and he gets a contract for 6 years. I mean, what was he thinking? You know, the Booth contract, the Keith Ballard contract, Brian Allen, all these guys. And I know that what Jacques was trying to do was build stability in the organization, but I think what he also did was handcuff us from doing anything else. And, you know, those aren't guys that you want to build your team around. And a lot of people came and went, you know, through this organization while he was here. He made a lot of awful, awful decisions. And I don't think he was very good when he became a general manager at attracting free agents. I mean, we had to get excited about Steven Reinprecht, Corey Stillman, you know, guys who were just, you know, Corey was at the end of his career for the most part. Steven Reinprecht was typically a third liner, and, you know, even some other guys that he tried to sign, those guys weren't going to improve our team. And on the other hand, some of the trades that he made were just mind-boggling. And I will to this day say that he held on to Jay Bouwmeester 18 months too long, and to only get what we got for him, if he was that well thought of at the time, which turned out to be a third-round pick, and Jordan Leopold, I mean, that's certainly not near what, you know, everybody thought he was worth. So he passed up a lot of things. He made a lot of mistakes, in my estimation. The relationship with him and Olli Jokinen was not very good. And, you know, unfortunately, Olli lost that battle. I would have rather had him stay here and Jacques leave, but that didn't work out. And then the bottom line of the whole thing is that he hires Peter DeBoer. DeBoer is here for a year, and then Jacques just leaves the mess behind and goes off to Montreal for probably one of the greatest coaching gigs a guy could have. And I predicted that he'd be around for 18 months, and I was about a year off. So it's too bad. You never like to see anybody get fired, but I honestly don't know if this guy's going to get another job again in the NHL as a head coach. He might. You know, he's won 600 games or over 600 games. Somebody might take a chance on him, but honestly, I don't know if his game and his style has, you know, matured or developed into what the game is right now. So that's the X-Panther factor.
Thank you, Frank. Obviously, Jacques Martin is a very well-tenured coach, and so he might get a job somewhere. You never know. I just hope it's not anywhere near Sunrise, Florida. Hey, talking about some things that have happened in the last year as we come here on New Year's Eve, let's look back. It has been a crazy year for Florida Panthers hockey. Frank, what were some of the highlights of this year for you?
if we're talking the entire 2011 season, I'm going to probably throw out the first 6 months because nothing really happened that I was too excited about. I think draft day was a great day by drafting Jonathan Huberdeau. And then I think free agency day, that July 1st was like a party. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I didn't really do any work at all, and my phone was buzzing, and once it all got started with all the players that we, you know, signed and picked up and then making the deal for getting Christopher Stieg, I think that was probably one of the high points of the year for me and just made me look forward to the beginning of the season. And then, you know, with also the hiring of Kevin Dineen, which I thought was such a sharp, sharp move by Dale Tallon. I think, you know, those items right there were probably the high point for me, you know, for this year.
Dave, what about you?
I think I would have to include July 1st in there. Of course, it was on a Friday this year, and I remember checking, you know, Twitter every, you know, at my day job, and just a smile on my face, you know, and I'm supposed to be doing, you know, some you're paying attention to what I'm doing, and all I'm doing is paying attention to my phone. I'm seeing Jose Theodore, which says, okay, goodbye, Thomas Vokoun. You're seeing Ed Jovanovski, and you say, okay, great nostalgia guy. And then you see Thomas Fleischman. You see Scotty Upshaw. You see later in the day, you see the trade for Christopher Stieg. And I remember when I got home, I was kind of looking at everything, and I was getting ready to go out with my girlfriend to dinner. And just one last one, here's Sean Bergenheim. So that was – you know, it was a day that just kept getting better and better. You never thought there would be a crescendo because it just, everything felt like everything, you know, it was still, the action was still rising. That was an outstanding day. And also, again, Frank, I'm going to have to piggyback off of you, but I think Jonathan, you know, drafting Jonathan Huberdeau on June, I believe it was the 24th, you know, we're going to look back at that day and we're going to say, wow, man, what a player we got. What a player we got. I hope I'm not building him up too much, but I'm a big fan of what this kid can do. You know, he can score goals when he wants to. He can sit there and make plays for others. And I think going forward a few years from now, we're going to look back and say, you know, he really, you know, the franchise was already revitalized a little bit, Isaac, but he really put it to the next level. And really, what an amazing year. If we did this podcast a year ago, we probably would have just talked about the future and the draft picks. And you know, we would have talked about good Branson and Quinton Howden and guys like that, and maybe who the Panthers would have drafted in the top five in this June's draft. You know, now fast forward a year, and not only are we talking about the future, but we're talking about the present. You know, this team is first place. You know, it's December 29th as we record this. The Panthers are in first place by 6 points. Granted, the division isn't exactly the Atlantic division, but they're in first place. Now, you know, as we came into the season, we're talking about, well, maybe they can make the playoffs. Now we're looking and say they should make the playoffs. This team is good enough to make the playoffs. These moves have paid off. And for that, I can't thank Dale Tallon, Kevin Dineen, Bill Torrey, and everyone else at the Panthers enough, because finally we're, you know, the Florida Panthers are relevant in hockey again. And this is a blast. You know, I can't wait to see, you know, get into 2012 and start, you know, working towards the playoffs and first appearance in 10 years.
For sure. I think all of that is just absolutely exciting. And it's been a great year to be a Florida Panthers fan, looking back at not just the additions, but the draft picks, the change in culture here in South Florida, the changes in the arena, the new color scheme, the We See Red marketing campaign, but that it's become more than a marketing campaign. It's become a slogan for this new team. It's been a fantastic time to be a Florida Panthers fan, and it's been a fantastic time for the Rat Trick as well, wouldn't you say, Frank?
I can't believe how far that the site has come. Not only since it first started back in 2009, but this year alone, with the help of you guys and the other writers that we have on the site, the amount of people that are reading us is just fantastic. And, you know, I love the interaction that we have. I'd like to have more and hope we have more, but it's really been fantastic to be where we are right now. I never would have thought it would have gotten to this level, and it's been a lot of fun.
For sure, for sure. And thank you guys for listening. Of course, you can always reach us at rattrickradio@gmail.com. You can also reach us on Twitter at rattrickradio or one of our other respective Twitter handles. Mine is at Josh Licht, JOSHLUECHT. Frank's Twitter handle is at The Rat Trick, and Dave's is at David Lassiter. We'd love to interact with you on Twitter. Do you agree with something that we said? Do you disagree with something that we said? We always love to interact with listeners and with people who read the site and other Florida Panther fans. Of course, continue to visit therattrick.com, which is the New York Times of Florida Panthers news and information. Make sure that you check that daily as we have some great articles coming up. One of our writers, Paige Lewis, is actually going to the Winter Classic in a couple of days, and she's going to have on-site reporting of that great event. We've got great stuff coming up with Rat Trick Radio as well, and we really appreciate you guys, and we're going to have some contests and some tweet-ups coming up here in the future. But thank you so much for listening. Until next time, I'm Josh.
And I'm the hoping John Madden doesn't get number 11 because that's Jonathan Huberdeau's number, Dave.
And I'm Frank, and Happy New Year to everybody. Look forward to seeing you either at the next game and definitely at our next Rat Trick Road Watch party.
Thank you for listening. This podcast is not endorsed by the National Hockey League or the Florida Panthers. All names, players' names, descriptions, and accounts, etc., are the express property of the Florida Panthers, Sunrise Sports and Entertainment, and the National Hockey League, or their respective copyright holders. All other content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Fansided LLC and therattrick.com. For more information, visit fansided.com.
Thanks for listening to Rat Trick Radio. Please drive home safely.